This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me at Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh with the top business stories of the day. Just a quick reflection on that grill that we did just now. I think one of my main takeaways is that, you know, some of the questions that we asked, you know, go beyond identity politics.
Right.
We really have to look at the big issue of inequality. And as Arumugam from Swaram is saying, you know, it's not just income inequality, it's wealth inequality. He made reference to Muhammad Khalid's book, The Color of Inequality.
Yeah, and I also appreciate Arumugam making a point whereby there are multiple avenues to address this issue of inequality, right? It's one thing to look at external, right? The externalities, the government, etc. But also looking within the community. I think that's a lesson that all segments of Malaysian community should adhere to, at least.
Okay. Now, back to our city. In some parts, very jammed because of the Thai Pusum processions. An amazing spectacle, I think. I think yearly it draws about 1 million people. So if you're not stuck in that, and if all you want to visit that, I believe KTM has regular services, and they're keeping their services going around the clock so that people can come in and out of that area safely. Now, let's look at this proposal, or more than a proposal, I think it's going to happen. It's the Alibaba City Brain Program, the first time it's going to be taking place in a city outside of China. What is the City Brain Initiative, Joyce?
Well, Sharad, this City Brain Initiative is the brainchild of Alibaba Cloud, which is Alibaba Group's cloud computing arm. So the goal here is to transform KL into an intelligent city. Well, so what could this mean for KLites and, you know, is it what?
Well, I think intelligent people take public transport, do their cars at home. Intelligent people perhaps work from home too. I don't know. I mean, okay.
Yo, you just dissed like all our listeners, man. Like, non-intelligent people drive cars.
Including us here. Yeah?
Is this only about traffic and, you know, avoiding traffic?
Okay.
Because if you have your ways, then you have alternative routes. Well, why do you need CCTVs all over the city?
So this is integrated. So it's meant to be integrated with the city system, you know, traffic lights, etc. It could essentially, what it promises, better traffic conditions, at least for the first phase of this program. So for example, if let's say emergency crews want to get to a certain spot in the inner KL, in inner KL, then this this City Brain Initiative will help them get there faster. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, according to World Bank, KL's population of like 1.8 million is spending 250 million hours stuck in traffic. Can you imagine that? 250 million hours.
Mm. So that's an aggregate score for everybody, right?
Mm,
and then KL. They've actually sort of put a number in terms of the money wasted, right?
Yeah.
As a consequence.
So if you break it down, okay, I mean, there are multiple ways you can engage with this set of numbers. So it costs Malaysia 1 to 2% of GDP. It costs about 20 billion ringgit, at least in 2014. And for the individual, you can break it down to 3,100 ringgit per year. That's how much you are having to pay up for the fuel incurred and also the lost hours when stuck in traffic jams.
So how is it going to work?
Well, according to Alibaba Cloud, the City Brain program has increased traffic speed by 15% and achieved per vehicle savings of 3 minutes on average. So you save
like
3 minutes.
Do we know, is that 3 minutes per trip or a year?
They say on average you save 3 minutes.
Yeah, so not quite sure. And whether or not this
per vehicle.
Whether or not this 3 minutes is benefit enough to offset the potential costs, right? Because this program comes with potential for mass surveillance being
Before we get all Black Mirror on everybody, right? And 1984, that famous book by George Orwell, there is the issue of just the computing power that that we have at our disposal today that allows for systems like this to operate, right? Just the crunching all that data, coordinating a huge number of things. And, we know there are many traffic lights in the city that don't seem very responsive to the reality out there. I mean, we have one in Bandar Utama just down the road that goes on like for 2-3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
And it's even at 5 o'clock in the morning, yes. Right. It won't change. Yes.
So with this initiative, okay, you're going to have 382 camera feeds and input from over 280 traffic light junctions. I'm sure you've heard the same numbers being repeated on the BFM news bulletins as well. So there'll be video capturing capabilities, image recognition, basically analysis on a mass scale, right? Data mining, etc. But that's only phase one, though, because there could be subsequent phases being rolled out under the City Brain Initiative as well.
Yeah, so the program also holds the potential to track individuals. It can also keep track of criminals, making it easier for police to catch them.
Aha! Mm. So, okay.
So here we go, Black Mirror.
So this is the Black Mirror moment, right? So it can track criminals, meaning that what is there? Facial recognition a potential in this? Because how would you track criminals?
Yeah, right?
Unless they're wearing a tag, it must be something else that the cameras are picking up. And if you can track criminals, can you start to track dissidents? Can you start to track political opponents?
Right. And
sorry, hashtag Black Mirror.
Or is it Big Brother? Is that Big Brother
that is
watching
Big Brother.
You?
And I guess 4.0. So yeah. It's the latest iteration of Big Brother.
And right, and then how do you define those individuals, those persons of interest as well, right? If you look at the BBC report in just a few months ago, they sent out a BBC reporter to kind of test the AI capabilities of their CCTV, right? It took them just 7 minutes to track this dude down, all right? So they flagged him in the system. He was walking about, heading towards his bus terminal. 7 minutes. That's
all.
This
is in China?
Took. Yeah, this is in China. I'm a different city from right. Where Child Brain Plug, City Brain.
Malaysia
was
City
out.
Brain, right?
Yeah,
right. Oh, different city. Okay.
So, different city in China.
So across China, there are 170 million CCTV cameras already in place, and an estimated 400 million new ones will be installed by 2020.
Yeah. Okay, the question is, in a country like China where maybe civil liberties don't get championed as much, you probably don't have as high consciousness among the public about data protection, about their own personal privacy. That might be changing. China's become an extraordinarily sophisticated society, mm, yeah. Right? What about Malaysia?
Well, I guess that is something that we have to ask ourselves, right? And this is why we're having this discussion right now. Whether the benefits, be it cost savings or fewer traffic jams, etc., are those benefits enough of a trade-off for the threat of less privacy? You've got comments from this AI manager at Alibaba who's been widely quoted on Forbes, etc. You know, he mentioned this at a World AI Summit just this past October. He says this in a quote, "In China, people have less concern with privacy, which allows us to move faster." So that's the context for the technology over there. Mm. In Malaysia, question mark.
Well, some of the AI cameras can even estimate like age, gender, you know. So there, it's tech has gotten to this far already, right?
Yeah, I know, they'll be like, right? When I'm crossing the road, they'll be like, alert, senior citizen.
Get him a wheelchair, you know. What's he doing out on the street on his own? Yeah.
But it feels safer in a way, no? Don't you feel? Like in Singapore,
well,
you see a lot of CCTVs as well.
This will be the main selling point. The selling point is our cities will be safer. God forbid that, you know, Malaysia becomes a Kuala Lumpur, becomes a target for terrorists. It will be an incredible tool to preempt terrorist attacks, right? And that's always been, that is the modern 21st century dilemma. Mm. You know, your privacy and freedom versus
safety.
Security and security.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. But then there's also the nothing to hide argument, right? Whereby if you have nothing to hide, you are not partaking in criminal activities. Mm. What do you have to fear, Sharad?
Well, absolutely. But the question is, who's defining what's criminal and not criminal? What's defining, you know, what is normal democratic practice and what is beyond the pale?
All right. Just a real quick mention of a WhatsApp we got from Hun Ki saying that this City Brain Initiative won't work as long as one driver, one car mentality remains. So, serious questions being posed there, I guess, to commuters all across the Klang Valley.
Well, the City Brain was implemented in Hangzhou, China in September 2016, right? Mm. And they hope to turn that into a smart city with the ability to self-regulate and even interact with human beings.
Okay, so we also have a tweet from Eng Un Yi who says, "China is the world leader in CCTV facial recognition technology." Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Okay, well, move on. Move on to that government proposal to lower interest rates. The Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or IDEAS, said that this suggestion, if taken up, will hide issues faced by the local property market. Real issues, they say.
Yeah, so basically they're saying that, what will artificial lowering of interest rates do, right? In summary, what IDEAS is saying is that instead of letting the market have a natural adjustment, if you lower it on its own, I mean, without market forces, they are artificially supporting it. Right.
And so basically what IDEAS is saying is also that, you know, if you do this, if you artificially support it, you know, you could be covering up for the kind of speculative activities and also, you know, the effects from the looser credit policies in the past, right? I mean, you recall that the OPR was about 2%. It was down to 2%, you know, after the GFC, you know, in about 2009 or so. Mm. And they slowly hiked it up, you know, going all the way up to 2014. It came back down again by 25 basis points. And as we know, last week, it was normalized, according to Ben Ngara's term, normalized back to 3.25%. But, you know, I think policymakers are now having to grapple with the effects on the property market here in Malaysia.
Yes.
Now, at a high-level meeting last Thursday, the Deputy Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, called on his Instagram a proposal to discuss to reduce interest rates. The question is, you know, where's it gone from now? From then, rather.
Yeah. Basically, I think what Deputy Prime Minister said, he's called it a high-level meeting in his Instagram. So basically, they discussed about the potential reduction of interest rates on housing loans to ease the burdens of home buyers. And he said that high interest rates was among the reasons behind the 3,605 unsold housing units in the 250,000 ringgit to 500,000 ringgit range last year. Mm. So basically, he's saying that it's because of high interest rates, right?
Yeah. I guess it comes back down to affordability, right? If you look at that price range, 250,000 to half a million ringgit, those account for about a third of the total of unsold residential units in Malaysia. That's according to Ben Ngara's numbers. So whether or not as IDEAS calls it, artificially managing or massaging the interest rates on those home loans, whether or not that will solve the problem. Because you compare that to what Ben Ngara has said before, it's not really an access to financing, it's about the affordability of the home. How much does the interest rates really play into the question of affordability as opposed to the price point of the property in itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably important to note that IDEAS as an institution, as a think tank, is committed to small government, to free market principles and such. And therefore, when they use the word artificial, it's very curious, because you say every policy tool a government has is an artificial intervention into the free market or into the free play of social forces, right? So, but are we going to discard policy as a result?
Yeah, and based on a comparative study, I think Zahid said that Malaysia's interest rates are in the mid-range among the developed and developing countries, right? Mm. So if you look at that and as well as the impaired loans for residential property, we can see that that's picked up a bit in recent years.
Yeah. I mean, and going back to what IDEAS is proposing, right, you know, going back to this whole radical or their usage of the word artificial, etc., where their bias is, they had a pretty interesting suggestion here whereby, you know, the monetary authority should not be fixing these interest rates. Instead, just let market participants, you know, either make the right or wrong choices, right? So just literally, you know, liberalize the market and let banks set whatever interest rates that they want. They say this, that the best solution, according to them, is to mitigate speculative investment and malinvestment, you know, by abolishing political power and the central bank's authority over the interest rate. Get Ben Ngara out of the picture. Forget the OPR. You guys do whatever you want.
Thank
God.
That's a fascinating and somewhat radical suggestion, especially if you look back at, you know, how the analysis of the Malaysian economy worked. We, you know, had on the Breakfast Grill recently a French academic, you know, Elsa. You know, Dimashaud, who spoke about the importance that the state has played in the development of Malaysian capitalism, you know. And I think one can't accuse Ben Ngara or any of these institutions of being adventurous or profligate or, you know, all these things that you might want you to curtail their powers.
Yeah, and it's not something that's unique to... it may be, you know, in its infancy here in Malaysia, this call to abolish the central bank, because I guess my libertarian friends in America would love me for saying this. They're all about abolishing the Fed, like, you know, forget the Fed, you know, they serve no purpose, they're just another level of bureaucracy, let free markets reign. So perhaps ideas echoing those same libertarian sentiments.
Okay, beyond this ideological debate, back to you, Joyce, about the property sector. How's it doing and what do analysts think about its prospects for 2018?
Well, the latest on the property outlook, according to Knight Frank Malaysia, the overall property market performance is expected to remain lackluster going into first half of 2018, continuing from the weak conditions in the second half of last year. So basically, this is, you know, the sector is going to remain weak during the period due to oversupply position in the main subsectors such as high-end residential, office and retail.
Yeah, at the same time, Knight Frank was also seeing more discounts being offered by high-end condo developers over there in KL. You know, they have noted that, you know, some of them have been launched with higher prices per square foot. You know, at the same time, more discounts on this property, properties are being offered given the slower market. Again, highlighting this mismatch in supply and demand, mismatch also in product and pricing.
That's right. And there's more supply coming on board. A total of like over 1,200 units are slated for completion by first half of 2018. These are like the Residences by Tropicana, Four Seasons Place, and Pavilion Hilltop. So, you know, it's like the supply is still there, but whether or not demand is picking up. And I think what the property consulting firm also points out is that there's a cloudy outlook for KL slang or office markets.
Yeah, office and residential as well. And I think we've got a comment from WhatsApp now via from Ashraf asking, why must developers be bailed out by clearing out unsold units?
Ah. Yeah, why is it a government policy? But, you know, what's also interesting is, you know, what's happened to public housing and, you know, and why haven't we gone down the Singapore route in terms of public housing, provision of public housing by government, but done in such a way that the building stock is well managed, there's reinvestment, and those actually become assets
and it's
for
well
the working class, for people, you know, who just entered into that very low level in terms of earning capacity.
Well, I think it's all about execution, because you certainly see no lack in terms of will by the government to roll out these programs, Prima, you know, all these other affordable housing schemes, but questions are being posed about the rollout rate, the take-up rate even, right? And whether or not it's actually fulfilling a real need here in Malaysia.
Yeah, but there's still more supply coming on board. I mean, there's already oversupply and there's still some 16 million square feet of incoming supply from ongoing and upcoming mega developments, right?
But it's just not priced at affordable, however you define affordable.
Okay, well, say that there is affordable. Yeah. There are affordable units, but where?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be like some whoop-whoop area for all we know, right?
You know, okay, like you used air quotes, which is not visible on radio, but the air quotes, when it comes to affordable, it's very, there are in fact yardsticks to to measure affordability, right? Your income versus the price and such that. So there are ways which we can compare the affordability housing here as opposed to other cities.
Yeah, I mean, and Bank Negara uses those benchmarks as well, and you can check out their reports on this issue on the website. But at the same time, you know, industry players then use a different yardstick as well. So many times on the Breakfast Grill when we have these developers on, they're saying, well, we ask them what's affordable. Oh, up to $500,000. I'm like, well, that's affordable to who? Maybe for Shiraz, but not for me.
Okay.
Exactly.
always.
So Shiraz, you are my yardstick.
Okay, do the banks have, are there any responses from the banking sector to this debate, discussion, Joyce?
Yeah, whether on the government proposing to reduce mortgage rates.
Yeah.
So far, no news, but we have RHB Banking Group Managing Director and CEO Dato' Karusale Ramli saying that they'll be guided by Bank Negara. And in quotes, he says, we have a certain framework in terms of how we offer our financing and we will continue with that. And he also said that banks will adjust accordingly to cover its cost and generate reasonable rate of return. Because so far, all the banks have just upped their base lending rate and all that, but no news on their comments on what the government is planning to do, right?
Right. Okay. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the news and we'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.